accession number 26848, reel 5.
Mr. Broomfield, reel 5. We're talking about when you joined HMS Sprague. And this appears to have been from the records round about the last day of February, possibly the first day of March, if you remember. You know, at the outskirts of Londonderry, was where you joined. Now, what were your first impressions of HMS Sprague?
Well, I was rather confused when I first went on, because I hadn't realised that we had actually walked onto the ship we were being drafted to. It took a while for the penny to drop that the draft chart was incorrect. And because I wasn't wanting to disclose to any officers that I was adrift, I had to pick it up from the other chaps on the ship. Anyway, it was the first time I'd ever been on a naval ship. And I was introduced to the Petty Officer Telegraphist who was going to be in charge of me. His name was Petty Officer Story, Tony Story.
With a D?
No, T-O-N, no, Story. S, no, proper name Story, S-T-O-R-Y. With no,
no E,
no, E.
No, right.
Tony Story. And he was a petty officer at that time, and he was in charge of us. And I was shown around the wireless office, and where I was to sleep. And the ship was a modern one, new one, just come across from Canada. It was one of these ships being... It had a plaque on the side of the ship said, built in Boston, Massachusetts in 30 days. And it didn't have places to sling your hammocks. It had bunks, three-tier bunks.
Now, you weren't sleeping in the communications mess. You were sleeping in the wireless office, were you?
No. When I say I was introduced to the wireless, I was shown where it was up by the bridge. But I was sleeping in the communications mess, which was aft.
Now, tell me about the communications mess. What was it like?
It was lined with bunks three high on each side. With
What were the bunks like?
They were... the bunk was able... You were able to clip them out of the way, and then they could then drop down on chains. And down on the bottom there were lockers. And my bunk was the top bunk. And I used to be able to sort of almost fly into that bunk, especially when I came off watch and I wasn't feeling very well, because I suffered very, very badly with seasickness, very badly indeed. But being the top bunk, I had steel cage with cables above me, and it was handy for putting my reading material above and storing bits and pieces, because we didn't have a great amount of locker room.
Now, how did you take to bunks? Because bunks aren't the British Navy's way, Royal Navy's way.
I found them very comfortable. I enjoyed them. I also enjoyed sleeping in a hammock, but I found them quite comfortable.
Which did you prefer?
I think bunks, because they were more convenient. With a hammock, you'd always have to sling it of a night time and then lash it up and next morning. There were cumbersome things fiddling about with. When you got in them, they were comfortable. But really speaking, the bunk was much more convenient. Much more convenient.
And you weren't thrown out of them?
No.
Because your top bunk is a long way to go. I mean, in the rough weather.
No, I was. It never seemed to be a problem. And we did have some very rough weather.
Okay. Now, what about the locker? Where was your locker space? What was it like?
It was about, say, 2'6" wide, made of steel, with a lid on it.
About 2 foot high, from what your gestures you're making.
Yeah, you could sit on them as seats. When the bunks were put up against the wall, they would be lines of them, like a settee, and that was where you would sit. And then further down the corridor there, there was a long wooden table, which was the mess deck table, where we
Now, what would you keep in your lockers?
The contents of your kit bag, your uniforms, your shoes, underclothes, personal belongings, all that sort of stuff.
Any personal stuff?
Yes, we had a little case for personal stuff. It was a replacement of what they called a ditty box for the old time sailors, and that you'd have your writing paper, your photographs, all that kind of stuff in there. But anything like that was all left in your locker, because you could lock your locker, you see, if you wanted to.
Now, what about the mess table? What was
the mess table was made of wood, which we'd have to scrub from time to time. The deck was steel, which again we'd have to scrub out. We had to keep the mess clean, you see. Look after it, and that was the communication mess deck. And other sailors used to come through our mess deck into something similar the other side of the ship. I was on the port side, but on the starboard side was a stoker's mess deck. So stokers would come, and that was particularly important when they came off watch. They would file through our mess deck to get to their mess deck. And being aft, we were just above the engine, so when we were at sea, we could hear the throb of the propellers constantly.
Now how loud was that?
Quite loud. Quite loud. I mean, you could hear it in the background. It didn't stop you talking to one another.
Did it disturb sleep? You know.
No, it didn't disturb sleep. We were so tired most of the time that really we could sleep through almost anything.
Now, what did you think of? I mean, the ships were American built. And they
American
were very
built.
Different.
Yes.
You know,
To tell you something about the mess deck. When I was first on the ship, the first few hours, the walls of our mess deck were steel, and I knew that the other side of that steel wall there was water, and we were below the waterline. And when we went to sea, they used to batten down the hatches for safety, you know, to thing. And I was very conscious of the fact that if that's sheet steel was ever perforated in any way, that the water would come straight into the mess deck. And for a few hours, the first few hours I was on the ship, I was very conscious of the wall of water of our mess deck. But in a very, very short space of time, that, which was a frightening thing to me when I first went on the ship, very quickly that went, and it became just part of my life. I never thought anything more about it. I will tell you that I had a little fear when I was first on the ship with what I'm telling you, but that didn't last very long, and I realised that you can't keep fear very long. It's an instant sort of thing, but you can't sustain it. It sort of evaporates over a period of time. And it became my home.
Now, what about things like the ships were all welded?
Yes, all welded.
Now, you hadn't been on another ship, so
no,
were you aware of things like that?
No, not at the time. You mentioned about the sound of the engines. Yes, I was over the engines. And I'll tell you a little thing that perhaps people don't know. But when we were in Atlantic gales, which was quite frequently, we could hear the propeller coming out of the water because it would increase in speed. You'd hear it digging in the water like a throbbing heavy note, and as it came out of the water with the stern of the ship coming out with the roller motor, you could hear its freewheeling, if you like. You know, you could hear the speed going up, and you got used to that in a gale.
Let's talk about the effects of rough weather then, as soon as we moved on to that. What about the ships? The captain class had a reputation for rolling.
In fact, yeah, they
had a reputation
did.
For rolling and pitching.
Yes, they did.
Can you comment on that?
Yes. If you were going from the mess deck, say, to the wireless office, you'd have to go up a series of ladders to get up, because the wireless office was just underneath the bridge. And when the ship was going up and down in the troughs of the waves, sometimes you'd be running up the ladders almost three steps in very, very quick succession. And then as the ship then went to dive down, you'd be having to labour to come up the next few rungs. So you're sort of going fast and then labouring. And the ship was rolling at the same time, so you'd sort of have to hold on. But you've got a sort of knack of getting rolling with the ship, as it were, and then getting the rhythm of going up and down the ladders. The other thing you need to know is that we had watertight doors and bulkheads. So to open up a watertight door, you'd have about, say, six clips to secure the door. And you'd have to open those clips to go through the door from the mess deck into the next mess deck and so on as you're making your way through the ship. This is obviously to compartmentalise the ship in case it got struck, you know, damaged in any way. And going through these doors was very tricky because they weighed an enormous weight. God knows what the weight of them were, but they were solid steel, thick, about 6 inches thick. So when that door was swinging, if you didn't get the swing right, you'd get your fingers trapped. And then when it went in position, then you had to quickly get the clips and go through. So it was a knack that you eventually developed. And as I say, when you'd been pitching and rolling around for a few weeks at a time, by the time you came back into port, you could well understand why sailors rolled, because they were sort of used to trying to keep their balance. And it was.
What about seasickness? How did you go with that?
Okay. Seasickness? Do you want me to?
Yes.
Yeah. I suffered badly with seasickness. I was such a bad traveller as a child that I would be sick on the Liverpool tram cars. If I went on holiday, sometimes I'd have to go by train and my parents would go by coach. I really have been a bad traveller all my life.
What on earth possessed you to join the Navy then?
Well,
you see what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, you knew.
Yeah. Anyway, I was hoping that I would probably get acclimatized to it. But I was all right while the ship was sailing along fairly smoothly. Obviously, there's a certain amount of motion. But once the weather turned nasty, then it would just be a question of time before I succumbed.
Now, how bad were you? What were the symptoms? I mean, you don't need to be too gory. I mean,
no,
you know.
I was very bad. I think the longest I ever went without eating any food at all was 5 days. When I was ill, I would be bringing bile, and I would feel dreadful. But mind you, I still did the job I was there for, namely taking messages through the earphones. We'd go on watch and we would have a bucket tied with a bit of rope to the table leg so it wouldn't move when the ship moved. And I would use that quite frequently. I found that I could still take messages down, writing on the message pads, with my head lying on the table. And on one occasion, I was taking the messages and writing them down when the petty officer came in, lifted my head up by my hair, just pulled my head up. He said, "You're not allowed to sleep on watch." I said, "I'm not sleeping. I'm just trying to stop from being seasick." He said, "It's an offence in the Navy to be asleep on watch." I said, "Well, may well be." I said, "But I'm not going to get the signals if I have to keep my head up, because I'm makes me ill. But while I've got my head down, I can actually manage." And he saw that I was managing, and he allowed me to to carry on. It was just my way of trying to ease the situation.
So you carried out your duties. It sounds like you were a borderline case of being put ashore.
It could well be, but never ever did I miss any messages because of seasickness.
Now, I want to talk a bit about, well, really, we're sort of joining the ship still getting used to the ship.
Yes.
Were you aware of the American facilities that had been on board? Were they still there? Because it's always a question as to when they went.
Yes, we had a laundry, we had a soda siphon, but they were on the ship when I first arrived at Londonderry, and they were very, very quickly taken off the ship. And the ship eventually left Londonderry. And
was this? How did you feel about these things? I mean, was the soda siphon? Was that a water cooler thing, or was it, I'm not sure what. So
I only saw it very briefly. I never used it myself.
What about the laundry?
The laundry I never used.
So these facilities didn't really impact on you. You didn't have
time. They were taken off very, very quickly within the first day or two that I was on the ship, and the ship was really being quickly got ready for the Royal Navy. And
was it a full refit?
No, it was a brand new ship.
Yes, but were they doing other things like adding more depth charge racks, things like that?
Not that I know of. I was only really involved in the wireless equipment and the sleeping arrangements. I wasn't wandering around the rest of the ship an awful lot.
So tell me what happened. Tell me that you joined the ship. So yes. Let's go through the story. We'll pick up the wireless because obviously your main job is going to be the wireless.
That's right.
So we're going to get onto that at your convenience. When it comes best in the story.
Yeah. When I joined the ship, my activities were really confined simply to the wireless office, the mess deck where we slept, and the eating arrangements when we had our meals.
Well, let's do the wireless now.
Right.
What could you describe the wireless? Is it room or office?
Office.
Can you describe it?
Yeah, the WT office, wireless telegraphy office. It had the transmitting sets and receiving sets bolted to the walls, I'd call it, with tables in front where you could rest your writing pad, and the chairs that we used were steel and bolted to the deck so that you weren't thrown all over the wireless office while you were sitting in them when you were taking the messages.
Was it big? How big was it? Roughly.
About the size of this room.
So about 12 by 10.
Yes, something like that, yeah. And just off the main office was a little cubicle, and the petty officer telegraphist used to sleep in the cubicle. So he was always very, very quickly on call in case he was needed.
And what equipment was there in the wireless office?
There were receiving sets and transmitting sets, and overhead level, where you could easily stretch up and touch it, was a transmitting aerial going from the sets up to the mast for the transmit the signals. And it was very easy when you were sort of talking to put your hand up and hold on to this aerial. And we were very quickly told off for doing this because, as the petty officer telegraphist showed us, when the transmissions were being sent out, if you did touch that, you could electrocute yourself. There was so much power going through it. Yeah, the way he explained and showed us dramatically about the power in this aerial, because it was like a copper rod, he got an electric light bulb and held it in his hand, started to transmit, and the electric light bulb started to glow in his hand without it being plugged in anywhere, just showing you the amount of electricity that was being radiated. And the significance of that is that when any seaman went up the mast for any reason, the officer of the day had to have some copper bars in his possession before anybody was allowed up the mast. Because if we started transmitting when a seaman was up the mast, it could have thrown him off the mast and killed him. So that was a safety device. They got sections of this thing they could take, and it had to be in the possession of the officer of the day before anybody was allowed at the mast.
Any other equipment in there? What actual type?
Well, the other equipment in there is for the toilets. The toilets were trough toilets, where you had...
this is the wireless office, I mean.
Oh, the wireless office, sorry.
Any other equipment in there? I'll come back to the head.
Yes, there was another little cubby hole where a coder would sit decoding messages. We had a coder aboard. Sometimes we would decode it, but sometimes the coder would do it. And this was initially we had it. We had extra equipment taken on board later on, but initially that's all we had to start off with. And my memory is of spending time in the wireless office, getting used to the wireless gear, tuning the sets in, getting used to them, finding the various frequencies.
Now, how would you do that? Take me through the process. I mean, you know, how did you sort of switch the set on and tune in?
Well,
I know it sounds obvious then, but nowadays stations are preset.
Yes,
weren't they?
Yeah, we were given different frequencies that we would use by the chief, by the petty officer, telegraphist, and we used to tune these stations in with just a rotary knob, and it had a volume control on it and a pitch where you could vary the note.
So you'd turn to roughly where it should be?
Yes, and then tune it in to make it more comfortable to receive. And we were getting used to this equipment.
Was it easy to get a good signal when you once you knew where you were looking?
I don't remember it being a difficult situation.
The difficulty of being a telegraphist was taking the Morse, not tuning in the signal.
No, not really. These were American sets, by the way. They weren't British sets, they were American.
How did they differ?
They were probably more modern than because they were brand new equipment with all the latest developments in them.
You thought they were better then?
Yeah, and you would actually plug into the sets with your earphones with a jack. But there would be loudspeakers for certain frequencies. Normally what we would do, we'd have two telegraphists on duty at a time. One would be receiving like a broadcast frequency, and others would be on what they call the port wave. So there were two different frequencies, and then the emergency frequency was on the loudspeaker, so that anybody could hear that who was in the wireless office. And we were able to receive Morse through our earphones, and after a while we got so practiced at receiving it that we could carry on a conversation while we were actually writing the thing. Because it all came through in figure code, and we had no idea what we were receiving.
These were in the
five figures.
Five figures.
Yeah, and we had message pads with little blocks where you could put the five figures and just go from one to the other. And then as fast as that message was finished, that would be ripped off by the coder. Then we go on to the next message.
So you'd have no... To you, it was a mechanical task, in the sense of you didn't know what you were receiving.
No.
There's nothing intuitive about it.
No.
You just
took it down, yeah.
You couldn't work out what the next letter was going to be at all.
No, this was just the beginning. There were other variations on that when we went to sea, but this was the beginning. And the main part of our work was this, taking all these messages, and they were all decoded and taken up to the captain, and then he knew what was going on in the area.
Now, What about the comfort of the headphones? What were the headphones like to wear?
They were made of, I think it's Bakelite in those days, black, with an adjustable headband on. I wore them hours on end. I never found any discomfort. I will. I'll leave that.
Okay. What about the duty rotors? What were the duty rotors? And how did they fit in with the watch system of the ship?
We were in what they call Western Approaches, three watches system, where you'd normally go. The watch keeping system is 4 hours at a time, with the first and second dog being two hours, and that would switch the system. Now, the idea behind that is so that you didn't get the rotten watches like the middle, which is from midnight till 4 o'clock in the morning, all the time, and it would rotate. But as occasion needed, if we had to have more telegraphists on duty, that would mean that sometimes, especially in convoys when there was activity going on, we would break down and go into two watches, 4 hours on, 4 hours off, 4 hours on, 4 hours off. And in the 4 hours when you were off, you had to try and get some sleep, write your letters, have your meal, wash, and you really didn't get an awful lot of sleep on that. But we were in two watches for quite a long time.
And when you were on watch, that would be you and another signaller. Another telegraphist.
Yeah, there'd be normally two telegraphists receiving and one telegraphist listening out for the loudspeaker and sometimes decoding messages if the coder was not on. If sometimes the coder would be there, sometimes he wouldn't. And, of course, the petty officer telegraphist was just either sleeping in his little cabin or down in his mess having his meals with the other petty officers, or seeing the captain or whatever.
But essentially on call.
Yes.
And monitoring you.
And monitoring, yes. That's right.
Did you find, was 4 hours a long time to be on? To concentrate, taking messages, or was it okay?
No, it was okay. It was okay. The other little thing I will tell you is that we had no portholes, so you couldn't see out. And the method of getting a message to the bridge was a little rubber bucket thing attached to a lanyard, and it was hauled up the voice pipe. You could shout up the voice pipe from the wireless office to the officer of the watch up on the bridge. You could shout up there. And he would pull this little lanyard, and the message would be in a little rubber bucket to save you going up and down the ladders to the bridge.
You couldn't. Yes, I see why you do that, because you could. You wouldn't shout a message through the voice.
No.
It'd be too.
Yes, you'd have the message in writing, and that would go up in the bucket. Or it could be taken up by hand, but remember this, and there's a significance to that later on.
Now, anything else you'd be doing while you were on watch? I mean, I'm not talking about specific incidents at sea now. I'm talking about almost a watch where nothing happens. Or were you basically just sitting there?
When we were at sea, we would be reading Morse and writing it down practically all the time we were on the watch. When we were in harbour, we would still very often be on watch, but it may well be we would only be using the port wave frequency, so maybe only one is taking messages and he'd be able to just talk to his friend. But it was normally two of us on watch at a time.
Now, I think we'll come to off-duty, off-watch sort of things when we get to sea, because we're still early days here. So you've been introduced to the... You're getting used to the...
Yeah.
Now, what was the ship actually doing? You joined her at London.
Are we on tape?
Yes.
Right. I've been telling you my first few hours and days on the ship, which was at Ireland. We'd after a while, we left Ireland and the ship went across to Liverpool.
Now, it says in the book that you went to Tobermory.
Yeah, but
working
went to Liverpool before that.
Right, okay.
Only for a little while.
I understand.
Which is my home. So I was able to pop home and see my parents. Then it went from Liverpool to Tobermory.